Hello there, my friends. Good evening. Welcome into another edition of JMAC Live. So glad that you are here with us. You can see the snow behind me. That's not real snow. That's pre-recorded snow. But I happen to know that in certain parts of Salt Lake City and around here, the snow is getting pretty bad. In fact, I just got a call from my daughter. She's on her way home from Salt Lake City, and she cannot see. The visibility is awful. So if you don't mind, I'll be kind of checking into Find My on, just on the side here to watch my my daughter as she's coming home. So if I'm a little bit distracted by that, that's okay. You know that I am a multitasker. We're broadcasting live right now to YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, Podbean. We're all over the place, and somehow I try to keep that straight. But anyway, thank you for joining me. Let me know where you're listening in from tonight. Say hello if you are on TikTok. Let me know what part of the world you are in. I am broadcasting live from Utah, just south of Salt Lake City. I come to you live every Tuesday and Thursday night, except for last Thursday. I had some last-minute things come up, and I apologize. I wasn't able to join you at that time. What's on the list tonight? Several things. I know we keep going back to January 6th, but it's important. And these text messages that went to the chief of staff of the White House, they're important. And I think that those who didn't want the January 6th commission were now starting to understand why. So we'll talk about that. Also, I've been telling you, and I'm not the only lone voice on this, but I've been telling you that the Texas abortion law is going to be used against gun rights. I've been warning about this. I've been telling you it doesn't matter what the outcome of the law is, if it's poorly written or if it creates a danger to other rights. And that's exactly what it does. And we're now seeing exactly what so many of us warned about is being played out. California now saying, well, we're going to use a similar type of legislation to go after gun manufacturers. This one was easy to see. And it's now happening. And then also more COVID updates. The question, how do the vaccines fare against the Omicron virus? So those are the things on my list. I'd love to know what's on your list as well. David says, welcome back, Jay. David is very kind. He always, if I'm not on, I get an email from him. And he's like, hey, I can't find you. Is everything okay? I love that, David and Mary Jane. Thank you. And Sandy, Heather joining us from Riverton. Wherever you're at, say hello. If you are on the TikTok, please take a minute and say hello. I can't put your comments up on this screen, but I do have the ability. Let's see if it's working. See, I do have the ability to bring your comments up that way. So, and if you are on Podbean, I can bring your comments up in another way. And is that working? Oh, well, let me fix that here quick. Nothing like some tech support live. Chris Larson joining us, also liking the stream. Thank you, Chris, for joining us tonight. Also, if you're in Utah or wherever you're at, let me know what the weather's like where you are at. Melissa joining us from Lehigh on YouTube. Hang on, guys. I'm going to make a quick change here so that we can make sure the Podbean comments come up. So there they are. All right. So that's what Podbean comments look like. This is what TikTok comments look like. And then Facebook and YouTube and Instagram and LinkedIn, those come in on the screen right here. So we're all over the place. Let me know where you were at and where you were listening from, listening in on. I'll start out tonight talking about this latest revelation with the January 6th Commission. I honestly keep wanting to leave it all behind. I keep wanting to leave Trump behind. I keep wanting to leave all of this behind. But because so many people continue to believe in election fraud, and I was out at a Christmas get-together just a couple nights ago, and people were telling me to my face that the riots of January 6th were nothing, that they were made up, that they saw the videos. And here's the two excuses: that it was either Antifa, which there is no evidence to support, or it was just people casually walking through the Capitol. And I'm sitting here, these are great, honest people. I work with them. These are people I associate with outside of work. And they are convinced that this is all a big to-do about nothing. So I've to the point now where I carry around my evidence, and I showed them the video. It's a video I showed you here a couple of months ago. And their mouths were dropped open. They had never seen that video. They had never seen the assaults on the police officers. They had never seen the destruction of property. They had never seen how close the rioters got to actually connecting with the members of Congress. They had never seen any of that. And I'm like, how? How? Well, because they're in a bubble. They're in their own echo chamber. And that's what happens when you've been trained to only believe one source of news. That's what happens when you block out all of the contrary opinions. Literally, they're like, I had never seen this before. And I'm like, how do you? And then they're like, it was Antifa. And I'm like, there have been 700 people charged. We know who they are. Most of them have been caught because they went home and posted it on their Facebook pages. And on their Facebook pages, there's pictures of them at the last Trump rally and the Trump rally before that and their support for Trump and bragging about what they did. It's not a secret who these people are. And it's just remarkable the lengths that we will go to try and hide this. And I think that this issue plays into the upcoming election. And I have told you that I have called on every elected Republican to denounce claims of election lies or present evidence. Because if we go through another election cycle and Republicans lose, and there is still the belief of widespread election fraud, the writing is on the wall here. It's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse. And then if Trump wins the nomination in 2024 and he doesn't win the election, you know he will continue to make unfounded election fraud claims. And what happens then? January 6th is just a drop in the bucket after that. So this stuff is important. And that's why I've always supported the January 6th Commission. I wish the Republicans would have joined it from the beginning when they were offered an equal number of seats and they were offered the same subpoena power, but they didn't. And now they're complaining about the process when they had an opportunity to join in full throat with full authority, but they didn't. So all of that is going on. All of this is a lead up to this. I have to switch screens here. Did you catch this from Liz Cheney as she shared what is now public information about text messages that Mark Meadows, who is the chief of staff, that he received during the January 6th riots? Now, this information is telling for several reasons, but here it is, the video and the audio from Liz Cheney.
Indeed, according to the records, multiple Fox News hosts knew the president needed to act immediately. They texted Mr. Meadows, and he has turned over those texts. Quote, Mark, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy, Laura Ingraham wrote. Please get him on TV, destroying everything you have accomplished, Brian Kilmeade texted. Quote, can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol, Sean Hannity urged. As the violence continued, one of the president's sons texted Mr. Meadows. Quote, he's got to condemn this shit ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough, Donald Trump Jr. texted. Meadows responded, quote, I'm pushing it hard. I agree. Still, President Trump did not immediately act. Donald Trump Jr. texted again and again, urging action by the president. Quote, we need an Oval Office address. He has to lead now. It has gone too far and gotten out of hand, end quote. But hours passed without necessary action by the president. These non-privileged texts are further evidence of President Trump's supreme dereliction of duty during those 187 minutes.
That is so powerful and so telling, especially when you consider that those people sending the texts are still licking the boots of Donald J. Trump. They still are. And they downplay what happened on this day. But during the event, what were they doing? What were they saying? And the other thing that is really interesting to me, Fair and Balanced, Fox News, all of them have the text message of Mark Meadows and are texting him about what the president should be doing instead of, this is a crazy thought for that I'm going to share with you, okay? When there's a riot going on at the United States Capitol and you are a member of the media and you have the text line of the chief of staff, wouldn't you be asking questions as a member of the media saying, hey, is the president going to make a statement? Hey, just wondering, what can you give us a statement about this? Hey, are they doing anything? Isn't that what you do if you are a fair and balanced member of the media? But what are they doing? That's the thing that I haven't heard anybody talk about. This exposes everything about Laura Ingraham. It exposes everything about Sean Hannity. You think that these are people seeing things from a non-biased perspective? Absolutely not. What are they worried about during the insurrection? What are they worried about? Your legacy. This destroys everything. What does this tell you about who these people are at Fox News? They're not reporters. They're not members of the media. They're not unbiased. They're not objective. They're literally his advisors pushing forward a common agenda. Now, if you didn't know that just by the coverage of just the president in general, you know it now from these text messages. Because aren't you saying, hey, Mark, does the president have a statement about what's going on at the Capitol? Hey, is the president going to go live? No, it's like, hey, you're destroying yourself. This reveals everything about the relationship between all of these Fox News people and Donald J. Trump. This is all you need to know. And certainly, I'm sure that this exists between CNN and other elected officials. And something tells me that if anybody on the right finds out about it, they would be outraged by it. It's not right. It's not right. You need to, it's like when people found out Sean Hannity's having regular lunches with Donald J. Trump. This needs to be in the world of news and reporting, this needs to be in the forefront. You need to know this. It's part of proper disclosure. Hey, just so you know, I'm giving you opinions about Donald J. Trump, but I have lunch with him on a regular basis, and I text him about things he should do. So I give him advice on a regular basis. I want you to know that so that it's clear that when I'm sharing that things that I present to you as facts, that you have a proper perspective on my motivation. These are, in a world of honest journalism and media, these are things that you should lead with them. And it's amazing to me that we just heard in a congressional hearing that some of the most prominent, highest level people on Fox News were not acting as members of the media that day. They were providing counsel to the commander-in-chief. This is incredibly telling. Incredibly telling. And even Donald Trump Jr. sending text after text after text. And what has happened since then? Have they punched up the fact that the president refused to act for hours on that day, while the lives of our elected officials were literally in harm's way? Have they punched that up, or have they downplayed? They've downplayed. So there shouldn't be any question here. Todd on Facebook says, isn't that why Chris Cuomo was fired from CNN? Similar. He was using station resources to help and advise his brother. So, yeah. Yeah. Do you think there's going to be any accountability from Fox News? I mean, honestly, if you turn on Fox News and Brian Kilmeade is doing his Fox and Friends thing in the morning and he shares an opinion, it should be very clear now, right? If it wasn't before. These are not journalists. They are not. These are biased, partisan people who have a show. That's what they are. And it needs to be very clear. Very clear. And that should be screaming banner headlines to everybody, if it wasn't already, right? If you're not a fan of the biased media that is CNN, but you're okay with this kind of behavior from Fox News, I'm going to suggest you're in too deep. I'm going to suggest that you're putting party over principles. You're in too deep, my friends. You're just in too deep. Let's see. I'll check over here on TikTok to see if there are any comments. Don't see anybody yet. Remember, I do see your comments on TikTok. I just can't put them on this main screen. Sheldon says they need to label and differentiate between commentary shows calling themselves news. That goes for Fox and CNN. This is a great point, Sheldon, and it's something that used to happen. When I first got into talk radio, many of the opinion shows, and I've always been an opinion show, and many of you know if you ever listened to me on KSL or back when I was on KRLD in Texas, and people would refer to me as a journalist, I'd be like, don't do that. Journalists went to school for journalism. Journalists are supposed to be objective. I have always been paid to share my opinion. And that's why this is kind of behind the scenes when I was on KSL and they decided to name my show the JMAC News Show. I didn't want that. I didn't like the name, because that would lead people to believe that when I'm presenting an opinion, I'm presenting it as news, as a journalist. So I don't know if you noticed this, but because I couldn't get them to change the name, I suggested some other names. They chose that one. I would start the show saying, welcome to the JMAC News Show, the show about my opinions about the news. I inserted that disclaimer, because I didn't want people to get confused by that. There used to be a time, remember, the views expressed on this program do not necessarily represent management of this station, blah, blah, blah. So you would know that what's coming up next is an opinion show. Neither CNN or Fox News differentiate between the two shows anymore, between the two types of shows. Do you know? Can you tell me? Is Wolf Blitzer, is that a news show or is that an opinion show? What about Don Lemon? Is that a news show or an opinion show? You should know by the way it's packaged and presented. You shouldn't have to ask. You shouldn't have to wonder. Anderson Cooper, is that... I mean, I watched Chris Cuomo. I actually liked Chris Cuomo before he got fired. To me, that was clearly an opinion show, but no disclaimer on the beginning of the show that that is opinion. On Fox News, which ones are opinion shows and which ones are journalist shows? How do you know? It should be clear. There are other places where you see clarity on that. In a newspaper, you guys know what newspapers are? You don't have the same issue. In a newspaper, if it's written in the normal part of the newspaper and appears on the website with a reporter's name on it, then you are to assume that that is journalistic reporting and upholding the highest journalistic standards. Then, if you go into the op-ed section, you're told this is an op-ed, right? They still try and have that clarity. Now, does that mean that bias doesn't creep into their reporting? No, it doesn't mean that. But I can tell you I've been in plenty of meetings. I've worked for CBS News. I've worked for Bonneville and KSL. I can tell you that over my 20 years in radio, I have sat through meetings where they talk to reporters about getting the bias out of their reporting and what phrases to leave out and those kind of things. And that generally, at least on a local level, most news stations are still trying to uphold the highest level of journalistic standards. They want to get two or three sources. They want to make sure that their opinions are left out. It's crept in a lot more than it has in the past. I'll give you another example. When I got into talk radio, an opinion maker like myself, I could do endorsements. So I've done endorsements over the years for IntelliBed and, you know, whatever, barbecue grills and, you know, all kinds of things over the years. But when I first got into talk radio, they wouldn't let reporters do endorsements because they were supposed to be unbiased and there was a perception that endorsing something for money is a violation of that practice. Well, over the years that changed, and now it's very common that you will hear news anchors on radio stations doing endorsements. That's something that has changed over the years, right? So journalistic standards and integrity are out the window when it comes to CNN and to Fox News. Shauna says, Jay, you have integrity, Jay. It's refreshing, and I love you and others like you. Thank you. Travis says, truth, I've been with you since the beginning here in Utah. Thank you, Travis. I wanted to name the show J-Mac and the News, like Huey Lewis and the News. Probably not the best name. I was never good at naming my own show. I hated the name The Browsers, by the way, on KSL. Oh, I never liked that name. And then I don't know if you remember, we did a big name change event and we changed it to The Browser instead of The Browsers. And we did that because the domain name The Browsers was already taken. So I wanted J-Mac in the News so you could say, so it's J-Mac's opinions and then there would be news. The other problem I had, and I really struggled with this for years, was during my show, breaking news would happen. And I never felt like I should be the one covering breaking news. I felt like, and I told this to them, to every station I worked for, I said, you have an entire newsroom of journalists and reporters out there. They should come in and cover the breaking news. Because that way there's clarity with the listeners. Because if I'm Mr. Opinion, and now all of a sudden I'm like breaking news, there's a school shooting, it makes it very difficult for you on the other end to know when does the factual reporting end and when does the opinion begin. And so I struggled with that, but I couldn't convince him. And I got to where I loved covering breaking news. But if you participated in that, you know that I always used very specific language, because this is how this is important to me. I would say, I would do it just like this, and I did it every single time. And we covered some of the most horrific mass shootings. We covered, riots. We covered so many breaking news stories that I was asked to cover as an opinion maker. And so here's what I would do. I would say, okay, here's what we know so far. And then I would tell you, okay, we know this, we know this, we know this. And then I'd say, now I'm going to speculate on some things. And I'd say, here's what we don't know, but we're seeking answers to these questions. Hopefully, for those of you who are listening, that brought some level of clarity, right? But we don't have that. And the bottom line is this revelation from Liz Cheney that some of the number one opinion makers on Fox News were texting Trump that day, not to get his opinion or not to get a press release, but to give him advice and counsel, should reveal everything you need to know about what these people really represent. And if you know their bias and you appreciate their programming anyway and you like the bias, that's fine. That's fine. But please don't try and tell me that fair and balanced. Don't. Just don't do that. Let's see. KittenFan76 joining us on Twitch. Haven't seen you here before. Thank you for joining us. Hello, out of curiosity, do you think bullying victims should do in a situation where the bully won't leave you alone? Kitten Fan, what we try and do is stick on topic for the first part of the show. So the things that I have planned. And then we do something after that. It's called Down the Rabbit Hole. I will save your comment for the rabbit hole for those who are tuning in just for the things that I have planned. Sheldon says, I think the public want and need actual journalism and news again. We all have our heads filled with hardline opinions that demonize others for thinking different. These big networks spread this lie that we should all hate each other. Independent sources seem to be the only place sane people exist anymore. Yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, when you say that people want this, I've come to believe that what so many people want is news and opinions that back up their confirmation bias. And when they get other than that, they've been trained to believe that that's fake news, that it's not a real source, and so they disregard it. And then you have social media helping them out with that, you know, coming up with algorithms. They're like, oh, we realize that this guy only wants opinions that match his current opinions, so we're going to only feed them that. And then when they see things that go against that, they block it. And so it's this perfect world of creating your own echo chamber. That's why I can be at lunch with people the other day and they haven't seen the videos of the violence that occurred on January 6th. All they've seen are the people casually walking through one part of the Capitol. And they fully believe that all the other stuff is a lie until I show them the video and their jaw drops. And one of them suggested all of that was staged. Like, okay. All right. Todd says, I remember when you and Amy Iverson were on when Sandy Hook happened. Yeah. Those were times when, and you know, Amy is a trained journalist, and I was so glad to have her there because we would kind of play different roles. It was almost like calling a sporting event when breaking news happened. She became the play-by-play, the journalist, so she'd be there getting the news and information, and then I would kind of be the color commentary, like, I wonder about this, and I wonder about that. So we worked really well in that regard, and she took that journalistic integrity very seriously. In fact, initially, she didn't even want to do an opinion show because she had been so trained to that. She was so good, though, And I was so devastated when she left the show. And then that left me in a place where I had to fulfill both roles. And so I decided to be very vocal about both roles. Okay, here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. So here's Jay the journalist. And then here's Jay the opinion maker. And hopefully you sense that as I was covering that. Sheldon says, I think we're moving away from people only watching people who support their bias. I hope so. He says, hopefully, it seems the major networks are losing viewers overall. I hope you are right, Sheldon. I hope you are right. I'm counting on it. You know, otherwise we are heading in a direction where you're going to have segments of the population that are so deep with their own belief system, and they will trust no other sources, and everything else will be an adversary to them. And we're already really to that point. People who disagree with me, it couldn't be that they have a different life experience. It couldn't be that they have good ideas too. It couldn't be that maybe they're right sometime and I'm wrong sometime, or the other way around. No, it's that they're evil. They're evil. They have ulterior motives and they're evil. That's the only possible way anybody could ever disagree with me. That's the world we live in today. And it's what manipulators do. They want you to only follow one source. This is what cult leaders do. This is what ultimate manipulators do. They want to play on your emotions. They want you to only trust them as a source. And I believe both of the parties and their extreme leadership play into this manipulative model now. They want to stir you up to fear, hatred, and anger. They don't want to bring you together. They don't want to unify you. There's no value to them in that. They want you divided so they can manipulate you. They can manipulate you to vote for them. They can manipulate you to send them money. And that's what's going on. Kitten Fan says, this is a juicy topic. I have a video from a few years ago about Sinclair's local news station reporting the same story word for word, very hypocritically. You have probably seen this video, but it would really fit here. So there's a couple of things that go on in a newsroom that kind of talk about this. People always they tell me that, you know, the news is bought and paid for. Like right now, the news is bought and paid for by Big Pharma. And from the top down, everybody's getting their marching orders from this mysterious source who's sending out the story to somebody, and it trickles down and everybody follows that story, right? I've never seen it. I've been in newsrooms for 20 years. I've never seen it. Nor have I ever been told what to say, what to believe. I've only ever been told about something that I shouldn't talk about. And that was when I was told on KSL to stop doing the presidential review at 2 every day. Remember, I used to every day at 2 o'clock do the presidential review at 2, and we'd talk about Trump tweets, and we'd talk about, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of Donald Trump. And I was told, no, don't do that anymore and scale back on the Trump coverage. And 20 years of radio, that is the only thing I have ever been told about opinions I should have, about stories that I should cover. I have always been in charge of the content that you hear on my shows. And if that had ever changed, then I would walk away because of my own personal integrity, right? What does happen is there are some turn'em and burn'em situations, turn and burn. So there are some stations, usually they're smaller stations, and what they're doing because they don't have the staff is they're subscribing to a larger service like AP News or ABC News or whatever, and they are literally taking the copy off of the printer and they're just reading the copy. That's not because they're bought and paid for by some mysterious Illuminati or somebody who's programming liberal media from the top. It's usually just purely a function of not having enough staff. The very first radio station I worked for, that was exactly what they did. They subscribed to a larger service, and then they could just pay any you know, intern or, you know, newbie off the street. Look, here's what you do. You got a nice voice. Come in here during the news breaks. Take this copy off the printer and just read it. And that's what they would do. And then I moved to Dallas, and they had a full newsroom. And they would never, ever do that. Every story they ran, triple-checked sources, make sure that there's no bias reporting in it. I had never seen anything like that. That was totally new to me, right? Complete. They send out reporters to breaking news and everything. I have to tell you, that's a rarity now in talk radio. KSL still does it. When I got to KSL in Salt Lake, full newsroom, reporters, verifying sources, journalistic integrity. They would never do that. But just because you see a situation where one station did something word for word as another station above them, that's not a sign of a programmed bias media. Usually, it's just a sign of some small station subscribing to a larger station's services, and the larger station is writing the copy. Normally, that is the case. I do believe that in general, there is a left-leaning bias in the media, but it is not something that is programmed from the top down. It is just a function of journalists coming out of our public education system, going into the college system, which is typically leaning liberal, and then getting into a system where there's already that slant. I've never seen a program from the top down, never. Just that's my own personal perspective. Sheldon says, I remember the incident Kitty was talking about where all the news stations read the same story word for word. It was the one where they all made the statements about false news. I'd love to look at it. I don't remember it in particular. So send it over. Send me the link. Love to see it. Leah joining us on TikTok. Let's get your comment up there. She says, this has been incredibly eye-opening. Leah is tuning in from Spokane, Washington. I happen to know that. Thanks for joining us, Leah. Let's see anybody else on TikTok. I can see your comments on TikTok, so please feel free to share them. Sheldon just sent over the link. I'll take a look at that during the rabbit hole, because I do have some other important things that I wanted to talk to you about. So that is my commentary on the fair and balanced people of Fox News contacting Mark Meadows during the riot, not to get a statement, but to tell them and give them counsel about how this is going to destroy everything the president has worked for. Very, very enlightening and surprising that Mark Meadows turned it over when he's arguing privilege over so many other things. All right, so let's move on to the next topic. This has to do with the Texas abortion ban. I have gone through this legislation with you in depth. And one of the things that I have warned you about is the way this legislation is written. And I've always believed that the end does not justify the means. And that's exactly what's happening here. They found a very creative way to write this legislation so that the punisher of the person providing the abortion, the punisher is not the government. The punisher is just average, everyday Joe citizen who can sue somebody who has gotten an abortion or provide an abortion. So the enforcer is now citizens. And the reason why I believe this legislation is so dangerous is because if you're going to allow laws to be passed where citizens can enforce things that are otherwise constitutionally protected, but we're not doing it, but citizens are doing it, and it provides a $10,000 reward for any citizen who does it successfully. This is the end of the Constitution, if you ask me. And I've been telling you the whole time that this will be used by Democrats to go after guns. Now, isn't it amazing that both sides are fighting for life? Ever think about that? Both sides are going through incredibly extreme measures to protect life. That's what the gun control debate is about. It's protecting life. That's what the abortion debate is about. It's about protecting life. How do the sides end up on so desperately different sides of the equation when they're both wanting to protect life? And that's what COVID regulations are for. They're about protecting life. But our standards for what is protectable life and when you can take away somebody's civil rights are completely different, I guess. Completely different. But here we are, the state of Texas, all proud and excited that they found a way to bypass the Constitution and make this enforceable by civilians. And you might be saying to me, Jay, abortion is not in the Constitution. It is. I know you're sitting there going, where is it? Where is it in the Constitution? It's not written in the Constitution. But the way the Constitution is written, when the Supreme Court makes a decision, their decision becomes part of the Constitution. So right now, abortion is constitutionally protected. And the state of Texas has come up with a way to bypass that constitutional protection by making it enforceable by civilians instead of by governments. And they're patting themselves on the back and they think this is great. And here comes exactly what we all saw coming. Hang on, let me change that. That's not what you're supposed to be seeing. Give me just a second. Oh, that's interesting. I want you to see the story here. And by the way, all the stories that I use are, they're all listed in, not listed individually, but I have a link in the description to wherever you're watching this, whether it's on TikTok or anything else. I have a link to the stories that you can go to. And a lot of the other stories that I don't cover that I think are important. Okay, Gavin Newsom calls for bill modeled on Texas abortion ban to crack down on gun manufacturers. California Governor Gavin Newsom on Saturday said he will push for a new law modeled on the Texas abortion ban that would let private citizens sue anyone who makes or sells assault weapons or ghost guns. Newsom has excoriated the Texas law for limiting women's access to abortion by allowing people to sue anyone who aids or abets one performed after about 6 weeks before many women know they are pregnant. Nevertheless, he said the Supreme Court's decision Friday to let the law stay in effect while legal challenges proceed has opened an avenue for states to circumvent federal courts. This is the worst way to go about getting what you want. The worst. Now, I think what's going to happen here, based on, if I read the tea leaves, what's going to happen is the Supreme Court will probably return this issue to the states. Now, I happen to believe that it is a state issue. I know a lot of people hate that because then you're going to end up with states who are for it and states who are against it. The Constitution is a limitation on federal government authority. And unless you can point to me to a place in the Constitution where it allows for the federal government to take away this power from the states, then it is reserved to the states, respectively. That is the 10th Amendment. And so what's going to happen is this. This is really easy to see. And I know that Texas feels like they're going to be reducing abortions and all of those things. They're not. What's going to happen is the neighboring state, the state two states away, they're going to legalize abortion. California will become a safe haven for abortion. And that's what's going to happen. But at least a state can say, well, we don't allow it, so it's not on our hands. And if that's what they can feel good about, then that's the way it's going to go. But that is the writing on the wall. That's the tea leaves right now. The question will be, and there's another case before the Supreme Court that I think better answers that. That case will come up in a few months. That's the case where Roe v. Wade should be decided. This case, because of how damaging it is and how much it opens the door to other constitutional rights being taken away, enforced by citizens, this thing needs to be shut down by the Supreme Court. As bad as they want to make a choice to send the power of abortion back to the states, this is not the way to do it. And I hope that they have the wisdom and the forethought to be able to make this choice correctly. Now, you may be sitting there saying, well, the Supreme Court is going to make this ruling on abortion, and then they'll turn around and they won't allow it when it comes to guns. Well, that creates a whole heck of a lot of confusion. And it should not be allowed. Michael says what they are going to do is going to make dangerous abortions more viable. Absolutely. David says we already see this with sanctuary cities. Everybody's going to rush to their corner when the truth is, I think, it's kind of like how I understand people's... Let me see if I can put this correctly. One of the reasons why I don't like vaccine mandates is not because I don't think that people should be forced to get the vaccine. It's because it does just the opposite. There's a segment of the population that instantly, when they're being forced to do something, regardless of what it is, they will turn around and they will say no, right? And so that makes vaccine mandates poor policy, because they actually do the opposite of what they're intended. And you ought to have enough wisdom and good leadership in government to understand the unintended consequences of what you're doing. So the same thing goes to me with things like abortion. We can, I believe, make much better progress through education, through programs and services. And if you look at the abortion curve, it's been going down every year since Roe v. Wade, the last time I looked. And so you can do this in such a way that people become defiant, and then they go to dangerous measures, and they go to other states, and you've really not accomplished your goals. Or you can find a way to do this to where it may actually have an impact on the issue. These types of things just force everybody in their corner, and they typically have the reverse effect that you're looking for. And that's why I lament that they become issues where nobody's seeking common ground. Everybody's using abortion as an issue to fundraise. And it just becomes so divisive. And nobody's out there saying, hey, is there a way to achieve these goals faster, better, more efficiently, and not have these dangerous situations created and things like that? Let's see. Michael says, great way to shut conservatives out of national government for 20 years, like overruling Roe. This means that no law is settled law. You have shut down the border, and now we have massive labor shortages. So there's a lot to unpack in what you're saying, Michael, and I don't want to go down the rabbit hole on all of those. I will say this. Um, I'm a big fan of civil rights. I love civil rights. You know this. I have friends who are free. They like being free. And so I struggle with the abortion issue. I struggle. I don't want to tell any woman what they can and can't do with their body. I struggle with that. I'm just being, this is what I do. I'm fearlessly honest with you. But I do think there is a point where the government has a job to protect those who can't protect themselves. And so for me, the debate isn't about, you know, because the same people are saying, I will gladly take away a woman's civil right to choose, are quite often the very people who are out there saying, you can't take away my civil right to not wear a mask, as if that exists, and wearing a mask can save lives. So there's not a lot of consistency in the civil rights argument. And that really bothers me and frustrates me. I would just like to believe, and maybe I'm completely up in the night here, that if the goal was to build on common ground, and the goal was to try and stop every unwanted pregnancy, that non-politicized minds could get together and that they could find a way to do this that satisfies the majority of the people. But we don't have political representation that wants to do that. This is a wedge issue. This is an issue that generates fundraising dollars for them. They don't have any interest in building on common ground or finding solutions that will actually drive the problem down. And that's why we need new representation. Representation that knows how to solve problems and that can build on common ground. And that can understand that through a proper approach, you will probably save a lot more unborn. And to me, the ultimate goal is not to stop abortions. That's not the ultimate goal. And I feel like all the legislation and everything else is aimed at that goal. And that's the wrong goal. That's the same as focusing on guns when it comes to school shootings. It's focusing on the wrong goal. The right goal is to stop unwanted pregnancies. That's the goal. That's the target. How do we stop unwanted pregnancies? That's where we should be focusing our time and our effort. With school shootings, the question should be is what in our society is creating young men who want to kill and then be killed? That is the correct target. Not taking away assault rifles. Because assault rifles do not stop school shootings. And this last one in Michigan, unfortunately, semi-automatic handguns. So to me, because we're so polarized, because we're so divided, we're so manipulated by the political parties, we miss out on what the real goal is. We do it with the environment. The goal, the issue is not to decide whether or not the climate change is man-made. That's the wrong goal. It's the wrong focus. That's where they want you. That's the squirrel distraction. They can divide you on that so they can fundraise on that. That's not the goal. The goal is something we all agree on. Every single one of us. I guarantee you we all agree on it. I 100% guarantee we all agree on it. Clean air, clean water, energy independence. I guarantee you we all agree on it. Any of you against that? Any of you want dirty air, dirty water? This is what these two parties are doing to us. They're taking our eye off of the real goal. And they're taking away the opportunity where non-political minds can get together in a room with the correct goal and come up with real solutions to solve the problem. That's what we're missing. And as long as we continue to rely on this duopoly of political parties who have no gain in solving problems, there is no gain for them Because the minute the problem is solved, the fundraising goes away and the divisive manipulation goes away. They have no desire to solve these problems. Until we replace that system, we're stuck with this. We are stuck with this. David says, you beat me to it, Jay. I am baffled by the GOP. Never talks about reducing unwanted pregnancies. That's the goal. That's the goal. And if you look, that goal has been making a lot of progress. But you get these conflicts in the party because on the one hand, they want to protect the unborn, but on the other hand, they don't want to fund programs for the newly born. And they don't want to fund programs that will prevent the pregnancy from happening in the first place. And I think that there's confusion here among conservatism because generally, as conservatives, we don't like big government and we don't like government programs. And so we resist anything in that regard. And that's wrong. What we should resist are programs that have unintended consequences that mandates, vaccine mandates, unintended consequences. We should be wise about what those unintended consequences are, and we should be against programs run by the federal government in this regard because they don't have the authority to do it. Leave the tax dollars in the states and let the state of Utah or your state, wherever you're at, deal with unwanted pregnancies. That's where that problem should lie. But in conservatism, we tend to do this thing where, no, we don't want any government programs. We border onto libertarianism. When the truth is there are many, many local government programs that have a tremendous impact and that save us tax dollars in the long run if we're smart about them. But conservatives like to, you know, it's like we can't do that. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Listen, there are some wonderful, good, effective government programs out there. And because there are bad ones, we turn into this place where we don't allow any of them. And to me, that's a huge problem right now on the right. Because on the one hand, we're going to force every woman who gets an unwanted pregnancy to give birth, but then we're not going to turn around and deal with any of the consequences of all of these children being born into all of these circumstances where if there would have been an abortion, well, then it's an unwanted pregnancy. And are we going to fund those things? Are we going to help the children after birth? Or are we going to say, shouldn't have had that kid in the first place? See what I'm saying? There's like a lot of inconsistencies here that need to be dealt with. David says, I'm curious, what are your ideas about replacing the current two-party system? Kind of down the rabbit hole, we can get into that, David. I think that, but I will just tell you this quickly. We need to force the parties to come back to us. I can share with you the thing that tells you clearly how representation is not working in this country right now. And that is that gerrymandering works. And to think about this for a minute. Why does gerrymandering work? It works because we've already decided who we're going to vote for before we know their name, before we know their background, before we know if they're people of integrity. We already know because we are loyal to the party that they are a member of. That tells you that parties run our government, not individuals. And if the crazy thought here, what if candidates and parties had to come to you every year to get your vote? And they didn't know if they were going to get your vote. Could they gerrymander? No. No. That's on us. That's on us. We've got to somehow break free of that. We've got to somehow break free. Michael says, no, we need the tax dollars from the feds. We in the red states are beggar states, every single one. Michael, I would prefer the tax dollars stay in the states in the first place. But if the federal government is going to be this Robin Hood and distributor or redistributor of wealth, I do not believe they should be able to attach strings to those dollars that they do not have constitutional authority for. So if you want to give a state money for education, fine. You have the ability to tax and to spread those dollars around. You don't have the authority to tell schools, local schools, how to educate. You don't have that authority. You never have. So the way you get around that authority is extortion. You don't say they have to do it. You just say, if you want our tax dollars, you will do it. And to me, that is a violation of the principle of the Constitution, which is they are only supposed to do things that they have specific authority, stated authority for, and everything else is reserved for the state. So that's a violation of the spirit of the Constitution. You want to redistribute wealth? Fine. Fine. You have the authority to tax and to spend. Fine. Send it out there. But when you attach the strings to it, that's, to me, extortion. And I'd rather the money stay in our state. Let's see. Heather says, if the consequences are unintended, that implies they have no idea of the consequences. How can they be avoided if they don't know what they are? That's such a good question, Heather. This is what I call wisdom. We have a lot of smart people in government. I don't know if we have a lot of wise people in government. Wisdom, my interpretation of wisdom, is knowing how human beings will respond. And I don't know that everybody has that. Some of these things to me are very obvious, but I truly believe they go unnoticed. There are those in our society who believe that if you pass a law, the law will be followed. Just that simple. Pass a law, the law gets followed. Pass a program, the program works. I'm somebody who complains about unintended consequences all the time. We talked about the unintended consequences of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which mandated health insurance coverage for people working over 25 hours. Was it 25 hours or 29 hours? I forget now. I was on the radio in Dallas screaming that that wasn't going to insure a single additional person. That the unintended consequences would be that everybody's hours would be cut to just below the requirement. So suddenly all these full-time people now, due to the great gift that was this government program, now you have a part-time job instead of a full-time job, and you still don't have coverage. Congratulations. So you have to choose wise people who understand unintended consequences, who understand that just throwing money at something. I remember debating the Affordable Care Act when I was on the air in Texas, and people kept calling, and this is what they said, we have to do something. I heard it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. We have to do something. And I'm like, if that something has a clear unintended consequence, then no, we don't have to do something. People get caught up in Washington in movement. They want you to look like they're doing something. So we passed a law. We did something. We look busy. And that's the worst thing that can happen. I don't want you to look busy unless you have an idea to solve the problem. But they look busy. Look, we did something. Obama, look, we did something. We passed a health care law. That's just not good government. So we need to choose people of wisdom. Michael says we would, let's see, David says, count my vote for giving ranked choice voting a shot for big elections. I'm all for ranked choice voting so far. We have reached out to a couple of people who deal directly with our voting systems. who are concerned about just the feasibility of ranked choice when it comes to ballot size, counting, those kind of things. So that has to be dealt with for larger elections. But initially, I'm really happy with ranked choice voting. Michael says, we would never get things done. This one-year thing is a great way for bribes. I'm not a big fan of things getting done just because we got them done. I actually kind of like gridlock, at least in the past, because gridlock forces compromise. And I'm one to tell you here, and I know compromise is just such an evil word, but compromise is the only way to get things done, and it's the only way to represent the largest group of people. The Great Compromise, the Constitution of the United States. When two opposing sides are forced to come together and build on common ground, the ideas are going to be better, the solutions will work better, and you will be passing something that positively impacts more people. I am not a fan, and people who have followed me for a long time know this, I am not a fan of any one party having total control. That scares me to death. Compromise, having to work, having to go into the arena of ideas and change hearts and minds, having to give up things that are not as important to you to get things that are very important to you. This is a valuable, incredible part of our government that we now consider to be weakness and evil. We somehow have been led to believe that there's only one way to run government, and that's our way, and that all other ways are evil. And it's never been that way. That is the philosophy of terrorists who have a religious belief that there's only one way to run a nation, and anyone who doesn't believe that is evil. That is not a core value of the United States. That is not a core value of our founders. That is not a core value, in my opinion, of people who know what the Constitution is about and know why it works. Every major piece of legislation that has brought about real change in our country has come at great compromise. That's a blessing. And we look at it as weakness, at evil. Now we want to ram our opinions down the other side. It's the worst way to do government. It's the worst way to pursue things. And that's what the two-party system has led us to believe. Michael says, how much money and training does it take to train one E1? Also, where should these bases be? Do you know that a goal of the military is to train people and at least bring them into the lower middle class that we do? So, Michael, we can have the discussion. I'm not going to be able to engage at a educated level about what you're talking about. I'll just be brutally honest with you. I believe in the military. The military is part of something that the federal government should have. I don't know if I'm the guy, at least at this moment in time, to have that discussion. David says, scary thought, perhaps unintended consequences are actually intended. There are those who would accuse people who are putting in government programs that what they're really doing is buying votes. And that would make it evil, right? If you know that a government program really doesn't work, it has terrible unintended consequences, but you're going to be able to sell it to the American people. And basically what you did is you got them a check for something, and you know that they're going to keep you in office because you keep writing them checks or government programs. Well, I know that exists. I don't know to what level that exists, and I'm not going to go around and tell members of Congress that that's their motivation unless I can prove that that's their motivation. That's why I choose to live and breathe in the arena of, will it work? What are the unintended consequences? I know it sounds good, but have you done the math about the long-term effects of this? I don't think the minute that you label something as an ulterior motive, that's the minute you've lost the battle, right? That's the minute that all bets are off and you guarantee you're not going to change hearts and minds. So whether that's intended or not, I'm not gonna operate in that arena. I'm gonna operate in the arena of ideas. And instead of talk about character and ulterior motives, I'm gonna talk about whether it works. And let's be truthful about whether or not it works. Michael says, correct about the bribes, check POTUS candidates in Iowa, ethanol. I know that there is tremendous pressure because I've experienced that pressure when I ran for Congress. I knew it was there. I didn't know how much I would feel it. Tremendous pressure to embrace certain things, knowing that that could get you the vote, knowing that that could buy you support. And that's always going to be there. I don't know how to get rid of it in politics. The only thing I can do is try and help people understand what those unintended consequences are and help awaken people to choosing candidates who don't fall prey to those things. But it's always been part of government. I don't know how you can get that out. What I do think you should do is the minute you see it, then you should replace that representative, right? We should be hyper aware of it as those who are the boss of our representatives. But I can tell you right now, our representatives don't feel like we're the boss. They feel like their employers are the ones who donate the dollars. So it's the special interest groups. It's the big money donors. Those are the ones who are the boss of our representatives right now, because they can go against us and they still get elected because they get the dollars. David says, pragmatic. I like it. So that was quite the conversation, all surrounding Gavin Newsom calling for a bill modeled after the Texas abortion ban to crack down on gun manufacturers. So we've had two really interesting in-depth discussions, one about the media and how it works, and whether or not journalistic integrity still exists today. And now I'm fascinating. I love it. Great discussion about representation and unintended consequences and the duopoly, the two-party system, and why it has become such a danger to democracy. And I really believe it. I really believe that if we continue to remain addicted to the two-party system in its current form, we are on a path, and we saw beginnings of that path on January 6th, we are on a path to a point of no return. And only by choosing differently on election day will we be able to turn that path around. So we've got to encourage people to run who we feel will not fall prey to these things. And when we see elected officials fall prey to them, time to go. It's that saying from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Had your chance, muffed it. So it's time for you to go. Any other comments on that? I would love them. Thank you for your feedback on these two discussions. I love it. I had one other quick thing to share with you, and that is about, we're still trying to figure out the Omicron virus, and California is going back into mask mandates right now because their infection rates are so high. You have several states that are on the breaking point of not being able to provide medical services. And everybody's wondering what Omicron is going to do. From what I've seen, and you know I read every single study I can find on COVID, it appears that Omicron is less deadly, but more contagious. And people are like, oh, good, then we don't have to worry about it. No, that the Delta, less deadly, more contagious, and more people are dying from Delta than died of the original vaccine, than the original virus, even with the vaccine. And that's because if it can infect more people, even though it's less dangerous, more people will die. People have a hard time understanding that math. But I wanted to share some of the early studies that we have seen. This is out of Johannesburg. A two-dose Pfizer-BioNTech vaccination provides just 33% protection against infection by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. But the next line is just as important. But it provides 70% protection against hospitalization. So it's only going to keep you from absolutely getting the virus 30% of the time. But 70% of the time, if you get the virus, you won't be hospitalized. So that's, again, this is a first large-scale analysis of vaccine effectiveness in the region where the new variant was discovered, appears to support early indications that Omicron is more easily transmissible and that the Pfizer shot isn't as effective in protecting against infection as it was against the Delta variant. The analysis was based on more than 211,000 positive COVID-19 tests, 41% from adults who had received two doses of the Pfizer vaccine, and 78,000 of these positive COVID-19 test results between November 15th and December 7th were attributed to Omicron infections. The study was carried out by Discovery Health, South Africa's largest private health insurer, and the South African Medical Research Council. And Michael says it can infect more people and it gets a chance to improve. Yeah. David says no studies about those who got boosters. Let me check. We can go here and see if I have flagged anything. Hang on a sec. I thought there was something about boosters and Omicron. Let's go to the COVID file. COVID hits 800,000 deaths. Let's see. California orders statewide masks. Vaccines and previous infection could offer some stronger than basic protection to Omicron. So that's if you've had the vaccine and a previous infection. Let's see, ER overwhelmed with unvaccinated COVID patients. I don't see anything in here in particular about the booster, although they are encouraging the booster. We can do a quick search here as well. And see what comes up. Michael says you won't get any really great data on the new Coke until it hits the market for a while. Yeah, too true. Okay, this came out 6 hours ago. All right, let's take a look at this. Let's see if I can get that up on the screen. So let's see, this is Reuters, which, by the way, I called Reuters Reuters for years. Reuters, all three U.S. authorized COVID-19 vaccines appear to be significantly less protective against the newly detected Omicron variant, but a booster dose likely restores most of the protection. There is the answer you're looking for, according to a study released today. The study from researchers at Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard, and MIT that has not yet been peer-reviewed tested blood from people who received the Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and Pfizer vaccines against the pseudovirus engineered to resemble the Omicron variant. The researchers found low to absent antibody neutralization of the variant from the regular regimens of all three vaccines. Two shots of the Moderna, can't speak, the Pfizer, BioNTech, or the J&J. But the blood from recent recipients of an additional booster dose exhibited potent neutralization of the variant, the study found. Conspiracy theorists are going to say, of course it does, because Omicron is fake to get you to get a booster shot. So I'll just get that out there for you. Let's see. Michael says, shouldn't we tax people that refuse to get vaccinated, aka red states? I did share a story the other night that the Trump counties are the ones that have the lowest vaccination rates. And as far as taxing them, I would leave that up to the states to do. I have no issue with employers, charging more for insurance rates for people who refuse to get vaccinated. I don't have any issue with that. As far as taxing them more overall, from a federal government level, I don't think I would support that. Maybe on a state level, hitting people in their pocketbook is going to be better than forcing them to get a vaccine. We've seen how force has been so incredibly effective. Michael says we are on the hook for every patient. Yeah. That is true. That is true. So that answers your question about the booster shots. So that was released today. So thanks for asking. In fact, I'm going to just quickly, while I've got it on my mind, I am going to save that in the old database. So hang on a sec. Flag it and tag it so that I can get quick access when I run into people who aren't buying it. And I'll also add that. So I just added it to the show links as well. So if you click on the show link in the description of wherever you're watching this, you should be able to see that study now. Anything else, my friends? We've officially entered the point of the show where I have gone through all of the planned commentary, and that means it's time to go down the rabbit hole. I will tell you, I'm not prepared to sit around for 3 hours and go down the rabbit hole like we have on past occasions, because tonight is an important event. Tonight, and it has probably already happened, but you cannot spoil it for me. It's not really a spoiler. I know it's going to happen tonight, unless there is an injury. Tonight is the night that Steph Curry breaks the all-time NBA three-point record from Ray Allen, and he'll do it in 500 fewer games than Ray Allen did. And so my son coming home from work should be home anytime. And we're going to watch. They're playing the Knicks. So I'm sure, and if you spoil it, I'm blocking you for a while if you spoil it. So don't do it. So my son and I will be watching the game as soon as he gets home. So that's our plan. For the last three games, he's been on the edge of breaking it. And I think the pressure has gotten a little bit to him. And he's only has to make 2 3-pointers tonight to break the all-time record. And we are both big fans of Steph Curry. So we want to be watching it when it happens, even though it will be pre-recorded. We'll say we were watching it live. Michael says the big deal is it's his birthday. Thank you, Michael. Happy birthday. David says, don't be that guy, Jay. Michael says, okay, let's talk about January 6th and PowerPoint. You're talking about the PowerPoint presentation that was presented to the chief of staff about ways to subvert the certification process. Is that what you're talking about? I don't know what you want to talk about it, but we can definitely talk about it. Anything else on your mind? I would love to talk about that as well. Let's see. TikTok. Oh, we lost our TikTok connection at 21 minutes. That's no good. Something about TikTok. I just can't stay connected to them for very long, unfortunately. I'm going to end the Podbean as well. So it'll be just us here on the YouTube and the Facebook and the LinkedIn and a couple others. Let's see here. Let's see where my son is at. Also see if my daughter got home safely. She was driving home in this Snow. Oh, she is crawling. Wow, she's driving home from Salt Lake Community College, and she should have been home by now, but she is hardly moving. Wow, it's got to be bad out there, the weather. Let's see here. The Zompal joining us talking about, we've dealt with all of these, Zompal. We've dealt with this. Go back, watch my other podcast. I am not in the mood to go back and debunk what I've already debunked. The virus does not, the vaccine does not become contagious. That has been debunked and debunked and debunked and debunked. I have debunked it. The vaxxed are not the problem. And I'm just not in the mood tonight. I'm not going down that rabbit hole. It's just so inaccurate. And I love how everyone's become an epidemiologist in the last few days, like few years, and they find something that they think matches their confirmation bias, something they've already decided. And I'm just not in the mood tonight. David says it's pretty bad out there with the weather. Jenny says the weather is horrible here in Logan. Israel says something. I didn't see your other message about herd immunity, Israel, on Facebook. I don't see it for some reason. David says the snow is coming pretty hard. Zompal says debunk the Pfizer-owned documentation. We've already talked about it. That report actually proves exactly the opposite of what you're saying. But it might take, it might take an epidemiologist to break it down for you. If you literally think that Pfizer has published a document that actually proves their virus is causing the problem, you really think that Pfizer has published a document that proves that. That is, first of all, if it is any kind of hoax or conspiracy, how stupid do you think they are to publish a document that proves that the vaccine is actually the problem, not the virus? It didn't happen. It didn't happen. So you're getting me fired up. Michael says, oh yeah, in Salt Lake, we got a foot already. Wow. David says lots of snow and sandy. Israel says, as far as herd immunity, do you think we'll ever get anywhere, even if the U.S. gets fully vaccinated, if the rest of the world does not? I think the rest of the world is going to catch up. I think, the magic number I've heard is 80% vaccination rate. I think that it's always going to be among us. My hope is that it becomes like the flu season, where you may have to get a booster. I don't see any point with people making decisions and all of the misinformation out there that we ever reach a true sense of herd immunity. So I don't know. I mean, we can hope. Zompal says, I absolutely think that Pfizer published it along with Moderna in their patient months prior to release, stating fear of international release. Yeah, we've picked it apart, Zompal. Picked it apart. let's see. He says, you don't even know the documentation. Probably don't even know that it's documented and the vaccine spike proteins are unfolded. Zom, go back and watch all my podcasts. You can't sit here and tell me what I probably don't know when I've dealt specifically with the claims you're talking about. I'm just tired. I'm just tired of having to do it over and over and over again. So if you want to see my response to that documentation, go back and watch it. I'm just done. I'm just done. So that's where I'm at. I've dealt with it, and I can't just sit here every time somebody who hasn't heard me deal with it go back through it over and over and over again. I would suggest that you pull yourself out of your confirmation bias world and you do some more research. That's what I would suggest. And I would also suggest you stop spreading that information that has been so readily and easily debunked. That's what I would suggest. Oh, he says, peace out, murderer. Yeah, that's where we're at. We're at a place where the reality that the vaccine is saving millions and millions of lives, in his world, that's causing the deaths. That's how warped and backwards it has become. Unbelievable. But if you really want to know the truth, Zompom, go back. If you're really interested in the truth, go back. See where we picked it apart, where we dealt with it. Israel says, even if the U.S. was fully vaccinated without the rest of the world being fully vaccinated, it will just keep mutating, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest risk of not having the majority of people vaccinated, is that it does continue to mutate. But typically, this is the good news, typically when it mutates to a place where it's more contagious, that mutation is typically less deadly. So that's why I hope, I mean, we could have a variant come out that just plows through all the vaccines and is more deadly and is more contagious. That is not out of the realm of possibilities. You know, I'm just in a world of hope here. David says, good for you, Jay, and having them go back to previous podcasts. You guys who have been with me this whole time, you know that we have been through this, and I am just not in the mood to once again go back and have to deal with people who find one thing that they think it means something. They have no training, no education. They literally think Pfizer is publishing a document that says their vaccine is more deadly than the virus. They literally believe that, and that somehow they missed it. Let me tell you something. If you're going to have a grand conspiracy where you convince all of the world leaders, all of the epidemiologists, all of the colleges doing all their own independent research, if you're going to have something that bamboozles all of them to the point of a global conspiracy, you are not going to release a document that debunks everything you're saying. That is conspiracy 101. So if you think you found that document, I would suggest you do a little bit more research before you start calling other people a murderer. That's just my suggestion. But at this point, I'd rather laugh than cry. And David, I'm glad you're still with us, even though we're down the rabbit hole. Still glad you and your wife are with us. Let's see. Rachel, my daughter, is still, wow, I would show it to you. She is moving so slowly on the highway. Wow, it's probably going to take her 3 hours to come home. That's probably how long it's going to take her to get home. Wow. Chris, still with us, says, Canyon School moved classes to online learning tomorrow due to the snow. Michael says, of all the bad bugs that could have happened, Corona-19 was a nicer bug. This could have been much worse. We still have those bugs ready to go. COVID will be an epidemic. This is what I say to everybody who's like, this isn't so bad. And I agree with what you said. It could have been much worse, and it could be killing hundreds of millions of people. The response doesn't bode well if that happens. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if we're acting this way over COVID, what happens next time? You know, what if another pandemic hits tomorrow? And it is more deadly, and people have been conditioned not to believe it. And I mean, it could just wipe us out in days or weeks. And anything the government says about it is going to be discounted. And we're going to have elected officials like our own Chris Stewart downplaying it. It's frightening to think about. And this is the one thing. So the other night, I was out to dinner with somebody, and they think that COVID has, that it's been an overreaction, and they think it's real, but that it's been an overreaction. And the first thing I said to him is, well, how do you know it's an overreaction? You, it's so easy to sit back and play armchair quarterback. You have a brand new virus and you're saying the government has overreacted and we're still learning about the virus? How do you do that? I don't understand. I don't understand how you do that. But I don't know. It's just amazing. What I said to this person, I said, this is my argument. This is my final statement on the whole thing. With all of the shutdowns, with all of the masks, all of the social distancing, and all of the vaccines, our healthcare system was almost overwhelmed. And if we hadn't have done those things, then our healthcare system would have been overwhelmed. And if our healthcare system would have been overwhelmed, more people would have died. And to me, that's the bottom line. Focusing on what percentage of people actually get it and those types of things, that's the bottom line. That our healthcare system was almost overwhelmed. And you saw in my stack of stories how there are some emergency rooms right now that are overwhelmed. And that's after all of the measures that we put in place. That's all you need to know about how deadly and dangerous COVID is. Listen, I am getting a text message from my daughter, and so I'm going to have to let you go. It looks like her car has stopped on the highway. So hopefully she's doing well. I will let you go tonight, and then I'll be back with you live on Thursday at 9:30 p.m. Utah time. Stay safe out there in this weather, and I'm sorry for cutting it short tonight, but I know that you all absolutely understand.